call the Tuesday, June 8th, 2021 meeting of the Collinsville Historic District Commission to order. The first item of business is the public hearing, which I will open on application 21-09, which is the siding on the house at 18 Maple Avenue. Keith, you are here.
Yes, so, I am.
All right. Mike, I had some technical difficulties, so I have the application in front of me. I do not have the additional materials. I know we did get it, and it did get mailed out to all the commissioners, so we can go forward with it. I'm going to be kind of driving blind here, so just bear with me. All right.
Sure.
Okay. What can you tell us about it?
Okay. My contractor is also on the Zoom. His name is Jack Wozniak.
Okay.
We do the application of the sign. This is Jack right here.
Hi, Jack.
How you doing?
All right.
And why don't we let Jack speak, because he's the one that's doing the work and the scope, and he can tell you everything we need to do.
That's fine. Yeah.
Well, we're going to make the house beautiful. It needs attention. And I am quite familiar with historic commission's concerns. I've worked, just my background, just so you know what I do. I've been doing siding since I was 18, and I'm 63. I worked for 25 years for Peter Royal Brown Company, and we dealt with Weathersfield Historic Commission numerous times, and I live in Litchfield now, and I've done a number of historic houses in Litchfield, so it's kind of my specialty. I don't do new construction, tract houses. I've been specializing all my life with the older homes, and I have a website if any of you folks want to see what I do. There's some older houses on there, and there's some close-ups of the trim work. My goal is to replicate the house, not change anything. I'm familiar with the freeze board details and all that. That's kind of what I really enjoy doing. I think the best representation of what I did was a job I did last year, pretty much exactly at this time, on Lovely Street in Canton. I have multiple pictures of it, but I don't know the exact address, but it's a red house with cream trim, and it was a 200 almost 200-year-old home, but it wasn't in a historic district, but we did it. And I think that kind of shows what me, my son, and our crew does with older homes. And they say a picture's worth 1,000 words, but I'd be willing to share any pictures, or if the commission wants to see, go on a website and see. And that's basically what I'm thinking. I'm open to any questions or anything like that you folks have.
Mostly what the commission is concerned with is the materials that are being used. So if you can describe what it is that you're going to be using for the siding.
Okay. I've dealt with a number of different products, but I found in my experience, my goal is to get a product that doesn't fade and has the best warranty as far as color retention. So I'm using a Narandex product. It's made by ABC. It's made by a certain tea company for ABC, and ABC is the biggest in the country, so they have a vested interest in this particular product. It's their name. Narandex is their name. They have a good product. And once again, the color retention is my biggest concern, because being in business as long as I have, I deal with this. I deal with claims when 20 years, or not even 10, an inferior product of 6 to 8 years, it'll start fading. So we're using a good product with a cap stock on it, on a surface that doesn't fade. We're using PVC trim coil. To me, that's key. In other words, all the trim, the fascias, the rakes, the freeze boards that I'm going to replicate, they're not made. I'm not using the plain painted coil stock, because basically you can see any house that has that. It turns gray after a while. It gets dingy looking. It loses its color in the chalk. So we're using a PVC coating. It's a vinyl coating, and it retains the color. It'll stay white. I've done jobs 20, 25 years ago, and still, other than the dirt on it, it doesn't lose its white luster. We're using it for trim coil. We're using a 3/8 green guard backer board under the siding to flush out the wall. And that's a high-end product, too. It's not the white loose cell stuff that's kind of inferior. It sucks up moisture. This stuff is pretty good. It's impervious to the elements and to even humidity, so it won't draw moisture behind the siding. We're going to, replace the louvers with similar size louvers, because they're pretty dilapidated, they're falling apart. And material wise, I think that's there's other questions. That's kind of the rundown on the materials.
Okay.
Is the siding itself is vinyl?
Yes. I'm sorry. Yes, it's vinyl siding. Yes.
It sounded like it was a vinyl coating or something. I wasn't quite sure what you were saying.
That's on a trim coil. Yeah, I should differentiate. I forget that. Sometimes I'm technical. I assume everybody understands what I'm saying.
We're not builders, no.
So the clapboard aspect of the siding is vinyl. It's a solid vinyl that has a capstock on it. My capstock, it's got a UV protector on it to keep the color. But that's all vinyl, 100% vinyl. The trim, that's what I do the window casings with, the door casings, the rake trim, the fascia trim. I fabricate that. I hand make that to follow all the contours. That is an aluminum roll, but it has a PVC vinyl coating on it to protect it from chalking and fading. So that is aluminum, but it's got, like I said, a thin coat of PVC laminated on top. So if you ran your finger on it, it literally, you can catch your finger on it because it's got that plastic coating, which is phenomenal. I've been doing this for almost with the PVC. I switched to PVC about 25 years ago because of what the regular trim coil looks like after a while.
The dimensions of this, is this matching the existing the siding, the number of inches to the weather, etc.?
4 inches, that's kind of standard. I mean, if you look at some of the old homes, every other clapboard, it'll go from 3 3/4 to 4 1/4, but 4 inches is pretty much the standard. That house does have a 4-inch exposure. And the casing width, I'm very careful replicating the dimensions, the symmetry of the window. If the sill is 2 inches, it stays 2 inches. If the casings are 3 3/4 or 4 1/4, they stay 4 1/4. So we don't alter any sizing on a trim. I'm very anal about stuff like that, actually.
Other questions from the commissioners?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, first of all, Mr. Wozniak, I'm rather buoyed by the fact that, you know, you do historic homes, and sounds like you do take care to make sure that they basically look like the way they did when they were all wood. As you probably know from working with historic districts, not all historic districts even allow plastic siding. We do have a tradition of allowing it, but with certain limitations. My first question was, it looked from the photograph of the vinyl that it was grained. It had a grain, we usually do not approve fake wood grained vinyl. The reason is because real wood doesn't show any grain when it's painted. While it may not be readily visible in shadow, in sunlight it is, and it, to my mind, it sticks out like a sore thumb. So in the 30 plus years that we've been in existence, we've never approved a vinyl product with a grain. So I think that might be the first thing that you should be aware of. And, in the past, the commission has been unanimous in that. You said that the window trim is going to be the same width, which is good. I assume that on the sills, where they stick out, you're not going to cut those. They're going to be finished the way they are. Is that correct?
Yeah, we don't cut. I'm not a cutter.
Right. In the old days, that's what they did.
They chopped it.
And the depth relationship between the clapboard and the trim, will that remain the same? So if you need to build something out, you'll build it out to remain, keep the same depth relationship?
Absolutely. That's critical too. We pay attention to that. What I do on the casings, if I have to pad out a casing a little, I don't put a bunch of screws and screw in wood underneath, because I find that I've stripped many houses over the years and it just doesn't work very well. It doesn't hold up. We use a high density styrofoam underneath. Like, in other words, if I have to build out a casing half inch, I get half inch sheets and I rip them on my table saw and we pad that out with that. It doesn't absorb air, and we don't puncture a bunch of holes in the casings.
That sounds very reasonable. And the corner boards and any other kind of vertical trim, between the clapboards, they would be retained the same. In other words, no skinny corner boards like they some people do.
We actually have 20-foot full-length corners with no seam. Most corners are 10-foot, but we got a 20-foot foam-filled one, so it's solid. You can actually put a light pole, your flight pole on it. It's so solid, and it's 5.5 inches, which is within a quarter inch or whatever of that one. But you get that look, and I get it. I understand where you're coming from with the corner posts.
Okay, so the corner boards are going to be and any vertical members are going to be the same width and the same depth relationship to the surrounding clapboard as they are now. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay,
that goes for the rake, for the free trim too on the rakes, because there's a board, there's a trim board there.
We retain that.
Absolutely.
Okay, and then along the eaves, I notice there's a little bit of a curve to the molding there. I'm not sure if it's from the photos, whether it's an OG curve or what exactly, but are you going to retain that?
Yeah, one thing, first of all, I hate ripping anything off because of the lead paint, the lead issue. I'm lead certified too, so I'm not going to touch anything. But I have rollers. When I make my trim, my freeze board, I integrate that molding as part of the rake trim, and I actually have rollers where I can roll the profile. So my finished trim, there will be a beaded trim covering over that, and that will not be disturbed. So the final look, like I said, my website. If you folks want to look at some,
sure.
I have zoomed in pictures of the trim work and all that, so you can take a look and you can see.
Okay, good. And then any other trim members that you cover will be the same in proportion, have the same curvatures to moldings, beadwork, whatever it is. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. I was a little curious about the board and batten portion. Are you going to have to remove, and it really doesn't matter to me, but are you going to have to remove the battens in order to be able to flatten the material against the wall?
Yeah, those battens, fortunately, that addition, those battens are pretty, the bottoms of them are pretty gone.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to take those off and then house wrap that and then put the 3/8 insulation over. Those battens really have to come off.
Oh, yeah, that's what I figured. And you're going to make that portion of the building pretty much look like the clapboarded portion. Is that correct?
That's the idea. And that building was not, obviously it's not historic era, but the windows, it has skinny 2-inch 908 brick molding casing, which is a common new casing. But when I do those windows, I'm going to scale them to the same size as the house. So if the house has 4.25, 4.5-inch wide casings, that addition will also have the same thing.
Right.
And the door frames also.
Good, because, you're correct. I mean, it may not be old, but it is historic in the sense that it shows the development and the growth of the structure in different eras. So, I think that's important to maintain rather than either make it all look new or make it all look like it was built in 1860.
So are you, because I can keep the 908 look if that's what you prefer. It doesn't, that's your preference, really. If that part, if you want the trim to maintain that dimension, I can easily do that. It's like custom make everything, so it doesn't make any
difference. Remind me, is that portion visible from the street?
Keith?
Very little.
Yeah.
Because, through the car lot, if you look from the road there, you might get a glimpse of it. Backyard, maybe a little bit, but the trees cover a lot, but not really the front street, not at all.
Yeah, okay, all right. Well, I would think you probably have a little more leeway. The trees don't matter, but, technically anything visible from a public street does matter. But if it's at the rear of the house, we're usually pretty liberal about how that works.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any further questions at this time.
Can I just press the siding? I have a couple questions about the grain, the wood grain. And I understand that concern, because when we worked in other districts, they had the same concerns. But most smooth panels are not even available right now because of not only because of COVID, but supply and demand. But there are some wood grain panels that really look hokey. They're computer generated. They get the fake grain. They got the little dots in them and all that. I think this panel, I don't know if you saw it. Do you have the sample case of the panel? I'm not sure. But they did a really good job of making it as subtle as possible, and it's not shiny. It doesn't have any. I don't see the grain from more than 3 feet away. But that maybe my eyes are getting bad as I'm getting older. But the smooth lighting is, like I said, I don't think I can even get it right now. And I don't know if it's available in the future. They discontinued a lot of the smooth products. That's just my concern. I'm just throwing it out there. If you see that panel compared to other panels, you might find that it's not as obnoxious as far as a grain. It's just a very subtle, almost like a brushstroke grain.
Right. Well, from my perspective, I'm assuming it sounds like you do excellent work, and this is probably going to last for a generation or more. And there might be a short-term supply issue, but this where you're constructing something that's going to last. And I'm also concerned that if we break a precedent of 30 years, we will be unable to do anything different in the future. And while you may choose a very subtle wood grain, some future applicant may not be so fastidious, may not have a contractor quite as skilled as yourself. And then we would wind up with something that really is inappropriate.
Okay.
Any other questions from commissioners? Okay. And we've got the outstanding issue is, what do we do about the grain? What can be done with the grain? I definitely understand where David is coming from. We don't want to set a precedent, especially since we've not allowed this for 30 years. What are the options that we have available to alleviate this situation? So really a question for Jack is there something that can be done about this?
I can make some phone calls and, see if there's, once again, some of it depends on color. They might have like a white panel. That's very popular, white smooth panel. But Keith, we're not, I don't know if that's going to come into the discussion, but the color was a little, it's sandstone. So it's a neutral color, very neutral color. But whether they have that in a smooth panel or if they're even making it during COVID, because I know they shut down production. I used to do long length panels to try to counter some of the seams, but they don't make that anymore because of COVID. They can't keep up with even the basic stuff. So I'd have to make some phone calls tomorrow and see what's available as an alternative and go from there, I guess. I guess that's all up in the air to see what we can get as an alternative.
Okay. All right, any other questions? Okay, hearing none. I suppose we could have a motion to postpone the decision on this until we hear back from Jack about what alternatives there are on the surface of the siding. But we're okay with the rest of the application as it's submitted. Does that sound like a reasonable situation we can do?
I think as submitted and as we have further elaborated in the discussion.
Right, yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So if I call tomorrow, and once again, the good thing about ABC is they're a national company, and they have 800 branches, and I have a very good relationship with them. If I call tomorrow, we can locate a smooth panel, because like they make, they used to make it, and some branch up in Pennsylvania or down in Pennsylvania might have some in the warehouse. I might be able to locate it. But if that's the case, you know, would we have to meet a month from now?
What we can do is we can approve the application with a stipulation that there's a flat surface solution available to this. If you find a flat solution, then you're good to go. If not, then we'd have to reconvene and see what we can do about it.
Okay, yeah. So
that sound reasonable? Okay, so having said that, do I hear a motion to approve the application as discussed with the stipulation that the contractor will try to locate a flat surface vinyl siding? And if he's able to, then we're ready to go.
Chairman, I think the proper motion would be to approve it as has been discussed with no wood grain. And then if Mr. Wozniak is unable to find a smooth siding, then it's they would have to come back to us.
Right. That's sort of what I was trying to say. That didn't stick very well.
Okay.
Okay, so do we have a motion to that effect?
I'm sorry.
Hold on. I gotta close the public hearing. Now do I hear a motion?
Yes.
Do I hear a second?
I'm second.
Okay, all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Okay, so you understand what we're doing here, Jack and Keith, right?
Yes.
Okay, very good. All right, so we're good to go from there. It's a conditional approval is basically what it amounts to.
Okay, and if he does he get a hold of you or someone on the board?
If you're able to find a flat surface vinyl, then you're good to go. The application is approved. If you're unable to, then you need to come back to us. We're going to have to take another look at it.
You got it.
Okay?
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much, everyone.
Okay.
Have a nice meeting.
Appreciate your time.
Okay, we'll move on to the second item of business, which is the minutes of the May 11th meeting. Are there any corrections or modifications to the minutes? I didn't see any. All right. Maureen did a wonderful job yet again. Okay, hearing none, do I hear an approval of the minutes as they were submitted?
Moved.
And a second.
A second.
And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we got our minutes approved. Okay, old business and project updates. Neil, are you on?
Yes.
Okay, I was about 5 minutes before the meeting started and I was able to take a look at the link on that first page of what you said. Just for background, this Streetscape 2 project has come in about $300,000 over budget, and the board has looked at cutting some aspects of it. It's a 268 page document or something. I just didn't have the heart to send that out to everybody, and plus I really didn't have a lot of time. I got it. I looked at it this morning. So basically, the last six or seven pages describe what's going on there. Neil, if you can give us a rundown so that we don't have to read 268 pages, I'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, there's only two of those 268 that you really had to read, but the I have them on the screen now. Main issue was that we got held up by DOT so long in order to go out to bid that we're obviously coming out of the pandemic and construction costs are up. We bid a $400,000 sidewalk project on Dowd Avenue before the pandemic, and we are returning just about $200,000 because the project came in that much under our anticipated estimate because costs were low. And because it took so long to get authorization to go out to bid, we're now at the highest construction cost period of all time. And the bid came up for basically a $1 million construction project. We are short $300,000 with the lowest bidder. So, you know, myself, the CEO, the project administrator, the director of public works went through and tried to, you know, equalize cuts throughout the entire project area, which, you know, I find to be personally devastating, given the amount of effort that has gone into trying to put together a what I thought was, after 18 public meetings, a very well thought out plan to facilitate additional foot traffic in front of the businesses in Collinsville in a manner that seemed to create balance between the residents and businesses, and drew on existing, you know, traffic from the trail, et cetera, that, you know, we're diminishing the potential effect that can have by removing now approximately $350,000 out of the budget, because we need a little bit of money for contingency. But $350,000 in cuts has been proposed. It's going to the Board of Selectmen tomorrow night to see if they want to go forward or not with that. I was presenting this to the EDA a few minutes ago, and, you know, some of them were discussing whether or not to, you know, seek, you know, getting a portion of this back from undesignated fund balance, which is an idea, but, you know, there's an unlimited number of ideas that you could go to undesignated fund balance for. So, you know, Board of Finance has to be very cautious in those types of requests. But one of the main things we're removing is there was a decorative hardscape on the corner where the Council Savings Bank is. That a lot of that is being removed. There'll still be sidewalk there, but the majority of the hardscape that was going to create a place there of interest and activity that would keep people walking up Main to get to the corner and say, oh wow, there's more businesses up on River Street, that's being diminished. The number of bluestone bands is being reduced tremendously along Main Street and being removed altogether from Market and I believe River. Most of the sidewalk in its entirety is being removed from North Street, which was kind of important to facilitate a connection between 41 Bridge Street and the restaurants up on River Street. There's a lot of other things. I did hold on to the decorative directional signage that the business community, the merchants, were, you know, so anxious to get because they think it'll be beneficial, and we agree. And I was able to hang on to the curbing on the town green. I would say that that is, you know, held onto by a very narrow margin at the moment, and I'm hoping it won't be touched if the discussion continues. But we did advocate to keep that, and right now that's still retained. So that's a real, you know, simple explanation of what the cuts are. I don't know if you have any questions about that for me.
Are any of the items that are being removed, are those items that, if funding is found sometime in the future, we can go forward with it, or is the construction going to be such that once we lose the opportunity, there's really no way to go back and put it back into place?
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter, to be honest. There might be some opportunity, but not much. Once you put in the hardscape elements, you're not going to cut them out to replace them with what you wanted to put in the first
time. That's what I was afraid of, yeah.
Yeah, one of the interesting items that we are cutting out that I'm not that concerned about anymore was, I remember when we first put in the new lights in Collinsville, we had a reaction because of how blue or white they were. We're going to replace them all with the new photocells, would make them more yellow. But, you know, if, as it turns out, a couple of years of just not cleaning the bulbs actually has the same effect. So we could save a lot of money by not cleaning the bulbs every couple of years, and actually makes it turn a more yellowish glow. But all the new lights will have the new boards that then have that natural, more natural light, if that's the right word.
Yeah.
Neil, are you still widening the sidewalk on River Street?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. I was just at Home Depot today, and it's like an 8-foot 2x12 pressure treated is almost $50. It's like, you got to be kidding me. It is what it is. All right, Neil, thank you very much for that synopsis. Bad news, but thank you for letting.
Yeah, Neil, if there's any possibility of our having any input to try to influence folks to restore some of this funding, please let us know, because a lot of these elements, while, you know, they may not seem significant, the overall effect, I think, would have greatly improved the walkability and the visual effect that we, you know, worked so hard to achieve.
Yeah, I'm very upset about it for that exact reason. But the only thing I could say is, you know, reach out to Bob Bessel, the first selectman, and, you know, let him know your concerns. But, you know, we do understand we don't have unlimited funds, and we, you know, the costs are high. But, you know, I think that's the best thing you could do is reach out to Bob and just let him know.
Maybe have a bake sale or something.
And when is it supposed to begin, the second phase?
Well, you know, I've been predicting the start date now for 6 years. But the reality is once the Board of Selectmen, if they make a decision tomorrow night, we have to go back to DOT and they have to review all the bid documentation and make sure we went out to bid properly. And then they have to review the process of the cuts and you know, they've made comments to us before. They don't want us to take too much out of one area, et cetera. And then they will have to authorize the award of the bid. And that could take 6 days. It could take 6 months. I don't know. And with them, it could take forever. And then we could end up, you know, then a contractor would need to be officially awarded. They have to mobilize, you know, fit in their schedule. I don't know. But whenever we start, we know it's about 7 months worth of construction, though. So there is no ideal time to start anymore. It'll take the full season, whether we break it out over, you know, a fall and a spring, or we do a spring through fall. We'll have to do it one way or the other.
Maybe the prices will go back down by the time.
But the day after we sign a contract, yes, they will.
Okay. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Neil on Streetscape? Okay, let's move on to new business. It was the Super Board meeting regarding the Axe Factory. I believe we have members of the board online right now. Is that correct?
We have Mr. Doyle, who's a member of the developer's development team that's here. He was available to present some more detailed information about the project if you have time to let him speak.
Sure, that'd be great. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, before we get going, I just want to observe that as a commission that will have a role in this process and we'll have to vote on it, we really need to stay very neutral in our opinions about any presentation. You know, certainly, you know, ask questions and say, well, I'm optimistic or whatever, but, you know, to have any specific views on the project, I think we have to be very careful.
Okay. Philip, you cue us in on things?
I'm Phil Doyle. My company is working on the land planning aspects of this project. I'm from LADA over in Simsbury, and I've lived in town, north end of town, for probably close to 40 years now. I originally worked with, my company worked with Rusty Tilney after he bought the property from the Perrys, and we got the original zoning in place, did the original master plan, and we have not been involved in some of the other groups that have looked at purchasing and developing the piece. So when Sheldon approached us, it seemed like he has a Sheldon Stein, the fellow who now has a contract with Rusty to move forward. Sheldon has a tremendous amount of experience in this specific type of work. He's very good at financing, dealing with historic structure renovation and new construction. So seems to be a good fit for the property. And we, I think as you, Mr. Chair, we sat in and listened to the all board presentation last week, which was rather unique. I haven't seen a presentation like that in a long time. And Neil and I had been speaking, and we thought it might be a good idea to at least say hello tonight. As David indicated, at some point we're going to be submitting an application to the Planning and Zoning Commission for a most likely a modification of at least part of the IH1 zone. I guess that has been done in the past, because we want to tailor it to our specific application. Once that application is made in the zoning regulations, in the main body of the zoning regulations, section 5, there's a a requirement that the that application be referred to the Collinsville Historic District Commission for your referral, for comment. And so the we'll be back to you certainly at that point to have a more formal meeting. At this point in time, we don't have anything to tell anybody. We're still in the midst of trying to do that. So this is just a sort of an introductory to say hello and to just indicate that we hope that we'll all be able to work together to try to save the complex. I know that I had spent a tremendous amount of time down there as through 2010 up to about that point working with Rusty, but I have spent less time there in the last 12 years. And when a few weeks ago I was spending a lot more time down there, was striking to me, and you probably are all more aware of it than I have been because you live nearby, but the deterioration that has taken place over the past 10 or 15 years has been quite striking. So the I think we're at a point where it's pretty evident to me that unless something happens relatively soon, a lot of those buildings are going to be pretty much irreparably deteriorated, and they're going to be lost. It's going to be very hard to bring them back. So, the Neil, do you happen to have the email that I sent over? Could you put that up so we can just kind of get everybody familiar with it?
Yep. Hang on a second.
It's easier to have you do it.
One second here.
That's not mine.
No, that's another story for another day.
That's good.
Oh, wait.
That's good.
I'm sharing the wrong screen. Here we go. There, you see that now?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Is that the one you want?
Well, let's just flip through them.
Tell me how to do it.
The existing condition survey on that we dashed in. The survey was originally done. We have to have an update done at some point when we move forward into site plan, but this was the original survey that was done by Hodge, and the outline of the border of the historic district is shown in green, so that everything to the top of the sheet to the north of that is the historic district. So we touch the historic district in a number of areas, and there are about 25 or so buildings on the property. That would be the boundary. I've taken and just dashed in where the bike path is to give people sort of an idea of where that particular thing is. Let's flip to the next one, Neil. The next one was what was approved originally and is the really the basis of the this was the master plan the site plan that resulted from the master plan that is part of the current IH1 zone, and this was the original plan that we developed with Rusty. The intent at that point, and interestingly enough, the intent today is to try to preserve the majority of the buildings from building 23, which was the old Berkshire auto building, then north up to the shipping and the building out by just behind the Crown and Hammer. So anything in that light tone we were trying to preserve 20 years ago, and I think the intent will be to do that today. The plans that are the buildings that are shown here in that darker brown color, those were the new buildings that were part of the original master plan. Yeah, let's flip to the next. Yeah, this was a plan. there's a series of people have looked at the site. This was a plan that maybe some of us remember. Sure. This had been put together by Fuss and O'Neill for Goldman and York sometime around the 2010 period, when Rusty Tilney had a contract with Goldman and York. They must have made a decision that most of the buildings on the site were too deteriorated to preserve. And this was the plan that they had proposed, and it received some amount of approvals. The blue were the buildings, new buildings, though I would say that I think they were trying to preserve the granite building, which is that longer building sort of in the center of the site. They also, too, were proposing a parking structure that is that gray feature to the left of the building. Is that? Called the Axe Forge. So that this was the latest iteration that came public. And the next plan, Neil, let's flip to that. This is the plan that Sheldon is comfortable with at the moment. We're probably still going to be making changes, but the idea would be to follow the original concept that Mr. Tilney had developed, save as many of the existing buildings as possible. The buildings in the lighter color with the crosshatch would be the buildings that we would try to preserve. For example, at the right-hand side of the screen, I have a hand-drawn note that says new buildings typical. The upper building there is sitting on top of, yes, that one new, that's sitting on top of what is that present wood frame building that Martel bus, the school bus system, used to be in. So that building, the old Martel building, would probably come down, and we would have some new buildings. But this relatively closely follows I don't know if it's serendipity, but it follows pretty closely the original master plan. And the difference between this and the master plan has been that Sheldon would like to limit the amount of on-street parking, so he has proposed a structure. And Neil, you could take the cursor and kind of point where that structure would be. It would be built into the hillside that leads up towards Spring Street. So that's that. That and that whole point, the point of doing that is it frees up more ground coverage either for open space or sidewalks than we otherwise had available to us 20 years ago. Neil, flip to the next few pictures. What I did just the other day I was out taking pictures, I was comparing the pictures that are in the IH1 zoning book. They're listed as 1999. That's the Berkshire Auto building on the left. And today, on the right, most of the windows are broken out. The roof is deteriorating. The back of this building, there are holes in the roof. I didn't throw those pictures up, but if you've gone back there, you've all seen it. And it just flipped through these kind of quickly, you know. You know, the granite building used to be tight. Now it's not. It's got a hole in it. And the inside has, I think Sheldon showed some of these pictures the other night at the all board meeting. The inside is deteriorating. So it's going to be a lot of work to fix that one up. Flip to the next. Yeah, the rolling shop in the back, that picture on the left, the roof was tight. Now the monitors at the top, there are holes in the roof. There's holes in all the windows. The building is falling apart. We're going to try to preserve that. That these buildings would be used for commercial purposes. In the back side of the west side is just awful on some of these buildings. The lower forge building. You can see in the top of all of these is a little map that shows where it is vis-a-vis. Yes, For example, the monitor along the roof has that was there in 1999 on that building projection is gone. The roof's completely open. The shingle roof that existed in 99 is completely deteriorated. The complex is really falling apart. It's going to take a lot of effort to bring it back. The east side of the lower forge is just awful. Where there was once a roof and the building was tight, the brick is deteriorating, the roof is gone. So, I'm sure you're all very familiar with this. So our effort will be to try to bring these back and restore them as closely as we can to their original state. And it's going to be complicated. I know that we're going to be dealing with some text changes to for the regs, as I said, that you'll see. We're eventually going to have to do the site plan application. We've got to do a wetland application. We've got environmental remediation. Yeah, this is a view that Sheldon had shown the other night at the meeting. So the process will be long. We'd like to introduce public paths and connections, and that white piece, that lighter piece, yes, the cream colored piece. I'd like to do a public plaza down in that area of the site. So I think it has a lot of interest. We'd love to be able to see if we could save the complex and bring some life into that area. And I'm sure we'll hear a lot of comments. We just hope that everybody is going to have an open mind, and everybody will work together to try to accomplish the goal of saving the facility. That's all I have to say. And got questions? I'm trying to answer any questions, but sometime in the next month or so, we will probably be coming to see you with some text amendments, and probably we'll have a much more comprehensive presentation at that point. That's kind of where we are.
Okay. So my understanding from the meeting was that the hope is to retain all except possibly two of the buildings. Is that correct?
That's correct, and I think the two buildings are, as I pointed out, the old bus garage building down there where Neil has the cursor. And then you'll go to the up towards the forebay. There's that, and go down, right on that, in the parking lot, keep going down, right in that area. There's a 1960s, 1970s building that is kind of an old, I'll use an unsophisticated word, decrepit industrial building. That I cannot find a picture of it in the documentation.
No, it was built after the flood. That's the corrugated metal building.
Absolutely, I figured
right.
That.
It's a so-called temporary grind shop that was built after the flood, and you can see how temporary it turned out to be. But
that's exactly right.
Yes, so that's why. It doesn't show up on a lot of things because it was built after the flood to accommodate grinding.
It doesn't even have a name. So when you look at the surveys, the darn thing doesn't have a name. But when you ask if the two buildings are coming down, that's the other building.
Of them, yeah, okay.
It's got. We'll all have to talk about it, but for us, we see it has no value. And it one of the things that we had to think about years ago that we've got to continue to think about here is how do we get emergency services, fire, police protection into all of these buildings. And you can't otherwise get into the back of the forebay buildings, that assembly of buildings, unless that building comes down and it's just, it blocks all access. Doesn't seem to have any value. I didn't know it was built after the flood, Dave, but that was my guess too. So yeah, that's
It was built to be temporary, so you're finally enforcing the original purpose.
Yes. That would be nice.
All right. Commissioners, any particular questions for Phil while he's with us? And we'll hear more about it in the future, but any preliminary questions?
Ask some garage questions.
Yep.
I'm going from the Hartford Current, and I know sometimes reporters get things wrong, so I wanted to get that right. The Hartford Current said the majority of the cars are going to be in this parking lot, and I think I read 300 cars are going to be in this parking lot. Can you just clarify that, please?
Being in the structure?
Yeah, in the parking structure.
That's probably true. When if you take a look at the IH zone regulation, that it limits the number of parking spaces on the site to 600. And okay. When we originally drafted the master plan for Mr. Tilney, Rusty Tilney, back in about the year 2000, we showed in that master plan that's right now it's master plan of record. It shows 600 parking spaces on the site. And I think Sheldon's feeling at this point is if we could put perhaps half of those spaces in a structure, it frees up the site for a lot of other purposes like green space,
right,
and access. So it is it's expensive. But it's an interesting question of trade-off. What do we want to do? We have an industrial complex. We'd like to save these buildings. You know, these buildings happened, our impression is, and Dave can probably fill us in more on some of the historical nuances of it, but factories grew, and they grew organically, depending on what their needs were. So the buildings kind of follow whatever rationale they had. And there's not always adequate space to meet today's demands of how do you fit a parking space in here? And and that was always a hamstringing question here. So it might work. Think about doing a structure to free up some of the ground space for other purposes. And I think that's where Sheldon's brain is going.
Okay, thank you for that. Again, back to the Hartford Current, and you mentioned the fact that part of it is into the hill, or into the, is that what you said? It will be built into the hill?
Yeah, you've been down there a lot, I'm sure. There's a pretty big slope that goes
right
up from the standard ground plane down there, either up to New Street or to Spring Street. So if we want to hide something, the best way to do it is to slip it into a hillside.
So in terms of the grade, would the grade go above Spring Street? Where would the grade end? For the first floor, it's going to be three floors, right?
We think so, but that's not even figured out yet.
Okay.
Still work in process.
Right.
We did talk about that with the zoning chair, who advised that if it did peak like a story above grade anywhere along the property, with the idea that the location has moved, that the exterior finish would be one that would, you know, look like an industrial building, you know, one story industrial building at grade. That would be their intent to the zoning commission, but it's not clear if it would peak above grade or not.
Oh, so we don't know yet, Neil?
We really don't have. I just walked over to the other side of my conference room here and looked at an enlargement of the topo, and the grade, Neil, just point to the structure. Right up there, up on Spring Street, the grade is up in the 320s. 18, right at the intersection. And the grade at the, you know, if you could put your cursor on the southern side of, right there, of where the structure might be, and this is all might, because we're still a work in process, the grade is about 290. So there's about a 30-foot change of grade. And usually parking structures are plus or minus 10 feet per floor. So, you know, it's hard to say what it might be that the top is going to be level with the grade of Spring Street. So it might not stick above the grade at all. At this point, none of that has been figured out.
Right. And I want to be sure I understood what Neil was saying. And if it did stick up, it would be a flat surface versus a bunch of cars? Or is that what you were saying? I want to be sure I understood.
What I was saying was the zoning chair made a comment to the developer that if it does stick up, say, one story above grade, that the side that faces the public view would have to be finished as a one-story industrial building to be complementary to the other buildings on the site as
right.
a way of trying to make it keep within the character of the project and the neighborhood.
Right.
That was
right.
his recommendation, which you know seems to make sense for reasons I think you understand.
Be consistent, because it's a big piece, so it's important to
yep.
figure out how it all fits.
And again, it might be visible or it might not be visible at all.
Right.
It might just be sunk into the hillside, so no one knows it's there.
So there'll still be some landscaping or something that could...
Well, there have to be, yeah.
And this parking would be for the businesses or the residents or anybody in general?
Well, I think it's going to be all three.
Okay.
I think it's certainly for the businesses, the right on this graphic that Neil has up, the pink color building immediately to the south of where the garage is, where the like the Idle Drop and the Forge building is, the names of them are, that's all going to be commercial. And Sheldon is hoping to have some nice restaurants and to have some artist lofts and some other retail space there. So it would be convenient to have this garage nearby.
Right there.
But those purple kind of colored buildings that are flanking on both sides, those are new residential buildings or rehab of for example, the Granite building. And
right.
We don't want to take up enough room to put all of the parking for those buildings on the ground. So if I had, let's say in the Granite building, if I have 20 units, I don't necessarily want to cover the ground out there with 20 or so parking spaces. I'd like to have some portion of those parking spaces in that building. And because of the overlap of parking, because parking, our theory is, and the part of the theory in the existing zoning regulation that we wrote so many years ago, is that there is an overlap of parking spaces. That there are times when businesses are using it, but if the businesses aren't active, then those spaces are available to others. And we're expecting that this garage will be able to be used by visitors, people coming there, maybe people who are riding their bikes. The garage is going to be available to the public.
Okay. All right. Right next to the garage, I'm sorry to be dominating the conversation, I'm sure others have questions too. There's a little lane. It's like right next to, right off Spring Street. The other rendition that's the line drawing may be a little easier to see. Everybody knows where I'm talking about. Well, you know where I'm talking about. It's like right next to, yeah. Can we blow this up a little or no? You can't see my pen. My pen's like, but you know what? All right, there we go. Thank you. All right. Where's that little lane? It's right off Spring Street and it goes down Spring Street.
Well, that's Spring Street, well, near him.
Yeah, over here. Yeah, that little lane here.
That's Spring Street that Neil has his curse on.
Right.
Curse
now, you know, a little more. Oh, he almost met. Look back the other way. Look up.
Are you talking about the emergency driveway?
Yes, yeah.
You know,
what are your thoughts about that?
I don't know. This rendering shows that emergency driveway either one or of two things, either blocking that lane or providing access, that lane providing access into the garage. And that's still an internal matter of debate how we're going to handle that. That driveway, I can remember years ago, the buses going up, the school buses coming out of the garage and using that driveway. We in the past were looking at using that driveway for emergency purposes.
Right.
And then there was a revision to the to the IH zone at some point. I want to say it was after 2010, after some point when I stopped working for Rusty on it, and he was had a contract to sell it to someone else. Stipulation that was in the regulations at that point that the drive was used primarily for emergency purposes, that was taken out. So it's sort of open to discussion how we want to use it. And I think there has to be some discussion with two important people in town, the fire marshal and the chief of police, who's, I think, the traffic authority in town, to tell us how they feel comfortable servicing this property. Now that we will have people living here, people coming in and out to the lower portion of the site that hasn't been too occupied in a number of years, what's the comfort level of the emergency services, and how do they want to see us use the driveways? Because we can go in any number of directions, that's one of the areas we're going to need some guidance on.
Can I suggest you also talk to the chief of the Department for Fire and EMS?
Pardon?
Can I also suggest you talk to Chief Gataski? He's the chief of Fire and EMS. Because the fire marshal doesn't manage the fire department. The chief of fire does, Fire and EMS.
Yeah, and I think what Neil is going to do, he's going to be guiding us through all of those communications, because I don't miss anybody.
We normally submit to the fire marshal, who then distributes it to the fire chief and then brings comments back to us. That's why.
Neil knows everybody. Okay, I think that's mostly what I have. Thank you for that information.
Yeah.
I look forward to the future to see what we can do.
If I may, I just wanted to add maybe a couple other nuggets to Mr. Doyle's presentation about the parking, because I do think the parking garage might be one of the more talked about things going on. And a lot of things I hear is like, oh, my gosh, a parking garage. We're going to be Blueback Square. We're going to be urban, because, you know, when I hear parking garage, I think of a big, you know, I don't live that far from CUCSU, and I think of the parking garages over there, which they tried to make decorative, but failed horribly. But this is not that. And we've always talked about having some form of a parking structure on this site. The development proposals that did not include a parking structure, I would say, would receive negative comments from us, because just the sheer amount of surface parking was unacceptable. We don't want it to look like a Home Depot parking lot in there. But the odd thing is, you know, I mentioned earlier the 18 public meetings we had for the Consul Streetscape project, and that the number one complaint or concern I got from residents of Consul and merchants in Consul was, don't you dare remove one parking spot as doing your little beautification project, because it's just too valuable. And the businesses didn't want to lose any parking near their stores, and the residents didn't want to have parking displaced that caused more parking in front of their houses, and it was a major concern. And while you're at it, can you add more public parking on the Axe Factory property? And that was a very consistent comment from everybody who participated, and we had a very broad process. So, you know, it is a function of something we're going to try to negotiate with the developer to see, you know, how much can we accommodate through this redevelopment to offset that demand that everybody knows we need additional parking, and we want to do it in a careful way that doesn't create, big parking lots in Collinsville. I've always been worried that the prior zoning and Consul incentivize people to tear down buildings and put up surface parking. We don't want that. So I want to just point that out. Also, we are looking at this from an environmental aspect as well. I mean, with the MS4 that's coming down from the EPA, we have to disconnect, you know, impervious surface. And about 96% of the site right now is all impervious surface. And we need to disconnect that, especially up against the Farmington River. And we need to look at how to, you know, make this a greener site. And this is going to be heavily scrutinized at wetlands as well. And, you know, stacking the parking in an appropriate way really helps open up that area. And it's something we have to consider as an important option for, you know, all those reasons. I just want to make sure you're aware of some of the other thoughts going on here.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, Neil, that kind of points out some of the parking issues is when we originally did the master plan, the concept existed for the rail to trail, but the rails to trail weren't built, and I think it might have in Fussin O'Neill at some point a few years later prepared the plans for the trail to go through. And everyone hoped for that to be a success, and it turned out to be very successful. But our original master plan showed all of the parking that was going to be down towards Main Street in front of the historic building or on our side of the historic museum and near the what is now the Crown and Hammer. All of that was going to be parking that would be dedicated to, because it's on our property, would be dedicated for the building that then housed the Collinsville Antique, which is the shipping building. But we all know what's happened. Since the trail has been very, very successful, that there must be 50 parking spaces that start down by the Crown and Hammer and run all the way down in two areas, because you have the rear of the Crown and Hammer up to the shipping building is a wedge of parking, and then we have all the parking that runs from Main Street down to toward where the I guess we call a canal road starts to drop downhill. Those are all taken up on many days by people who are using the trail and or people who are doing other business in Collinsville. So we need to somehow be able to provide the parking for people on the site. If we don't have the parking, we can't rehab the buildings, and the building will fall down. And we have to take care of the overflow for the public, because we know that people using the trail is always going to be parking in those specific locations. So we've got to find parking someplace else and make this viable, or we're going to have some problems accomplishing our goal.
Hey, thank you, Philip. It was very, very worthwhile.
Well, thank you. And we look forward to working with you and the other commissions, and we hope we can pull this off.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay. Any last questions for Phil while he's still on with us? Okay. Hearing none. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Yep. You too. We'll move on to additional new business. I wanted to pose a question to the commissioners. Has everybody been double vaccinated, and do you want to revive the in-person meetings beginning in July? You don't have to, and if anybody is reluctant to do that, we won't, but I'm offering it out there as a possibility. I'd like to all see your faces again.
Yes and yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm double.
Is there anybody who has a concern or would be opposed to doing that?
It is a longer drive for me when I meet in person, but that's okay.
You well, never go home. Neil.
You can still join us electronically, but the rest of us will be together.
Can we do a hybrid? Could we do a hybrid? Because there's sometimes it's just easier not to, like, maybe Walter's not here to speak, you know. So yeah. I know he's been vaccinated double, but it may be just easier sometimes, especially maybe in the winter, to meet hybrid. Could we do hybrid or?
Hybrid is harder to pull off. You need to have the one meeting room that has the specialized equipment, which we would compete for with other boards. But it is possible on certain occasions we could pull that off, but we wouldn't be able to do it routinely.
Okay, well then why don't we plan on meeting in person in July? We'll see how it goes. All right. Any other new business? Hearing none, do I hear a motion to adjourn at, was it 8:41 p.m.? Is that what it is?
Yep. Sir, moved.
And a second? Need a second? Okay. All in favor of adjournment, say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? And we are done at 8:41. Thank you very much, folks. I know it was a long meeting, but there's a lot of important stuff to go over. And hopefully we'll see you in person in July. All right?
Great.
Okay.
Have a nice night.
Everybody, thanks, Neil, for making all
recording stopped.